As a sales manager, you are judged by the performance of your team, and you're praised when they do well. But one thing that you've not been able to figure out is how to get everyone on your team consistently hitting quota every single month. On the Snack Sized Sales Podcast, we discuss the science of selling STEM. Sales leadership in the science, technology, engineering, and manufacturing fields is difficult. You will learn from sales managers just like you that will give you actionable insights and tips on how to develop as a leader and achieve your revenue targets every single month. So pop your headphones in and get ready to listen to my guests today. They will give you information and inspiration to ensure that you have actionable insights that you can put into place today. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Science of Selling STEM. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of having Alyssa Huffman as my guest. How are you today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me, Ms. Greer. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She's spent 2 decades in award-winning sales, contracting, distribution, marketing, product development, leadership, and team building. She focuses specifically on medical devices, biologics, capital equipment, robotics, and pharmaceuticals for growth strategy implementation. Her main passion lies in organically growing dynamic teams focused on uniting healthcare communities to develop medical devices, protocols, and techniques with the highest level of clinical evidence and innovation. Wow, you sound pretty amazing. So tell me, 2 decades ago, how did you get started?
Well, I applied for 7 years into medical device and pharmaceuticals and barely got an interview. And if I did, it was I was swiped by pretty quickly because I didn't have experience. So I started in, I knew that I wanted to be either in college, either a journalist for the Travel Channel or in medical devices. I had planned on being an orthopedic or orthopedic surgeon or a plastic surgeon, but that did not happen. And so I knew I loved the technical space, and I liked working with my hands. So I got a position with in advertising. I worked for Clear Channel, Gannett, in print and in radio advertising. Also did some work around the television space, the news space for a while. And then I got lucky enough to get hired into medical device as in capital equipment. And I worked for them for a couple of years, and then I got very excited because Smith & Nephew hired me as a 1099 rep. That was transformative in my career. As a 1099, I had no clue what I was getting into, but I figured it out pretty quickly. People weren't in the OR, were not very excited to see me there as a new rep and the only female. But then slowly over time, I grew trust and grew friends and realized that I had other opportunities available to me as a 1099. I picked up a variety of companies' products and portfolios with regards to spine, total joint, trauma, regenerative medicine, sports medicine, and biologics. Went into, and I was a distributor for quite a few years. I recognized that the market was changing and got out of the distribution model and went into capital sales, and then went into sales management, got my executive MBA, and now I'm currently the director of marketing and clinical development for Fuse Medical. I do consulting work in private equity, in the private equity space as well for Neos in New York City, and I'm the CEO of my own company, Illuminate.
Wow, so you have just the million things that you're doing, that's all. Just a million things.
That's it. That's it.
You mentioned that, you know, you in college you said, I want to be a medical device rep. So I'm curious, because so many times what we find is in sales, we fall into it. Nobody really says, I want to be a salesperson when I grow up. So tell me, how did you know at such a young age that this was something you wanted to do?
Well, from the age of 4, I had thought that I was going to be a surgeon. I mean, it was just, that's what I was going to do. And I went through a series, a little phase in college. I went to UMKC. I took a trip across the nation, just left and fled Destin, Florida, which is my hometown, which I love and adore. And but I landed at UMKC in Kansas City and just flailed. I just did not do well. I was not in a great headspace. I was too immature. And I was talking to my dad, and I said, if I'm not going to be a doctor, what do I do? I don't have a plan B. And he was like, why don't you be an ortho rep or a device rep? He was like, at that time it was 1999. So it dates me, but, at 1999, device reps were doing pretty well. And I had no idea. I hadn't even heard of it. I was an athletic trainer in high school. My high school was lucky enough to have a program where you could get certified to be a high school athletic trainer. And I was using that to further my development in the orthopedic space. But yeah, so it was just, it was a process of failures, actually.
Wow. So what I really like about the story that you shared, it was, so I thought I was going to be a doctor, like so many kids today still think I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or engineer. And your dad, he had the foresight to say, well, you don't have to be a doctor. I mean, you can still be in the band and not be the main singer, the main attraction. Why not be a rep? And so it seems like you kind of, through a process of elimination and having some good advisement, decided to take that path. So you mentioned that that was what you wanted to do, but it took you about 7 years to get into it. So what kept you going? Like, what drove you to keep pursuing that passion?
Well, you know, I think sometimes you just have to suck it up and keep going, putting one foot in front of the other until you reach your destination. Very few things are given to you in life. Sometimes you get lucky, but a lot of times the people that get lucky, they don't take full advantage of it, or they don't fit the exact need, or they don't have the capacity to realize at that moment how lucky they were. And that's the beauty of, I'm a firm believer that the best CEOs in the world are the ones that were at the lowest level. You know, they say that the best CEOs were the janitors at one point. And people really underestimate the power of building alliances with people that aren't necessarily the C-suite or the sales upper management. You develop your tribe of people, and that's how you become successful. You can do grit and perseverance for sure. You have to have that. But having people to stand by you when you need them is a big part of it as well.
That's good. I think that, you know, there's a lot of lessons in what you just said. It's one thing that I think so many times in that sales profession, we think about, oh, I got to talk to the CEO, I got to talk to the head of the division, the head of sales, the CFO, whoever the C is, or the VP, right? And like you said, you underestimate the person who maybe the brand new marketing rep that they just hired, right? Like, what kind of intel can you get from there? And so when you started in sales, you did something that for a lot of people sounds pretty scary. You did a 1099 job. So as a 1099 sales rep, what were some of the struggles that you had?
I actually talked to one of our teams about this last week to make sure that expectations were aligned with reality. When you're 1099, they are taking an investment in you. And they don't get paid by the manufacturer to train you and to develop you. It is just like real estate. You build your brand, you build yourself, you build your awareness, you strategize how you can reach that market and how you can reach those individuals and what's gonna differentiate you. And so my distributor, after realizing that there was opportunity in my market, he sent me to St. Louis, and I worked with Dr. Barrick and some of the team over at WashU. I went back and forth for about 6 months, and then went directly into the OR. And was very green, but it was a process, and I didn't understand the risk reward trade-offs as the distributor, from the distributor's perspective. I just looked at it like the distributor makes so much money, why can't they pay me a salary? And that's not reality. So and why aren't they doing X, Y, and Z like the big companies do? It's a totally different market, and it's a totally different demographic and subset of people. And it's risk reward, and it developed my sense of entrepreneurialism, which I would never ever take back that experience. I loved working for Smith & Nephew. It's a great company and great people. And I'm very proud to have started my career in medical devices that way.
So back in the late 90s, or as my children so affectionately tell me, because they like to make me feel old, in the 1900s, when you were, when you were a woman in sales in the OR nonetheless, what was that experience like for you?
Well, it was fun. It was nerve-wracking. It was, some days were high, some days were low. It was a complete roller coaster. All fingers are pointed at you because you're not the employee of the hospital. You're not the W-2 rep. You know, you're not an employee by any stretch of the word for anybody. So you're always, it's boot camp, really. You have to learn how to apologize when it wasn't your fault. You have to stay humble and really, really, really understand your strategy. The amount of time, if people spent time strategizing where they excel, where they lack, we would all be doing so much better in our roles. It's all about strategy and aligning your strategy with the proper people.
So how has being strategic really helped propel your career from being that 1099 sales rep to where you are now?
So early on, I identified that there was a large misunderstanding in the market regarding biologics. And I was lucky enough to have a surgeon who early on wanted to work with robotics. So not only was I running the computer navigation machine and getting that experience in 2007, well before the market really captured robotics, but I also saw definitively a need for intelligence within the regenerative medicine space. So PRPs were just coming out, the Magellan machine was just coming out, new biologics, glass, bioactive glass was coming out. There were a lot of, and it was just also confusing, and the gold standard was just to use autograft from the patient's, like bone from the patient's body, to fill in large voids. Because if you have a large void in bone, it will not grow together. It needs a scaffold to help grow the bone together and heal. And this is I don't want to get very complex on this, but people didn't understand it. A lot of the doctors didn't understand it. They just were comfortable with what they were used to. And so within those two realms of technology, I really tried to understand biologics better than anybody else. I don't know if I did, but I felt like I did a pretty good job. And that's what propelled me further on down my career, is the my intel for biologics and regenerative medicine.
Mm. So way back then, you realized that, hey, here is a opportunity in the marketplace for me to really shine. And so even as a young salesperson, it seems like you were very strategic about the roles that you took, the types of things that you asked for mentorship on, because it was a building block to where you were headed.
Absolutely. And as a woman, I mean, the wives of the surgeons were not going to be very excited if I was playing golf with them or traveling with them very often, you know, and I had to recognize that I probably was never going to have those relationships that the other reps had with physicians. And I had to understand where my benefit lies. And that was working, was planning. Planning on challenging weekends or holidays, anticipating that somebody might miss something, so I would be the backup plan. I was okay with being a backup plan because I was good at it, and then eventually I became the first plan. So.
I love it. I love it. And you know, I think that I got an email yesterday, as in, you know, in 2021. And it was an invite for a poker game with cigars and drinks. I was like, oh yeah, you definitely are inviting women, aren't you?
I'm going.
And so what you said, it's true, right? There sometimes I have to use a different strategy to really get to where I want to go. So talk to us about your transition from individual contributor into leadership.
So I took a step down in pay and started with a startup in the biologic space and started an executive MBA at the same time. I knew that I wanted to reach that other level, another level. I was bored, to be honest with you, and so that's why I had achieved some really, really some really favorable results and awards over the years, and I wanted more, and I expected more out of myself. So that's when I took a step down. I took a significant pay cut to get into management. And based in Springfield, Missouri, I knew I had opportunities, but I would have to move. And at that point, I couldn't move. So for somebody to hire me, it was going to be a startup, and it was going to be, which I was okay with. That actually excited me. And I knew that I was going to have to take a step down in pay. But at the same time, I leveraged working for a startup with gaining my executive MBA, and I went to WashU to provide insights from a financial analytics standpoint. I recognized throughout my business career, having my distributorship, that I was just doing plug and play in my accounting. I really was very, very poor. I was not proficient, and I had an accountant, and I was relying too heavily upon him. So again, with regards to strategy, I saw if I'm going to get anywhere in management, I'm going to have to really put myself in the books and understanding basic accounting principles, the economy as a scale, manufacturing and operations. I knew distribution very well, and logistics and contract negotiations. That I really excelled in, but I was lacking in severely in other areas.
So there's your strategy coming back up again. Most people don't realize that, because the thing with getting into sales management is very seldom can you get a job as a sales manager without any sales management experience. And if there's not a path at your current company, then if you go to another company, kind of like you said, they're not going to just say, oh yeah, you can just manage all of our salespeople having never done it before. So that was, again, another strategic thing. And if you are able to say, I am going to take a pay cut, I don't need to, I can take, live nimbly, and I don't need all of that for 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 years, so that it propels me to do what I need to do. And it sounds like because you were at that startup and you had a little bit of extra time, probably you could pursue that MBA.
Yeah, it couldn't have been better. It was a great opportunity. It was a great time. I was lucky to have been seen as somebody that could help a startup, and it gave me a fantastic insight into the challenges behind commercialization of products and strategy, GPOs, and hospitals. So one thing that I think that a lot of companies, large manufacturers, are missing the mark on is hiring sales management without sales experience. And I, throughout my career, I didn't have any females at all until the very last one, and she had just moved over. But that wasn't in orthopedics and spine. So there are very few managers within orthopedics and spine that are female that have sales experience, let alone sales experience at all. There's not a ton.
It's, you know, and our lovely industry of STEM sales, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because there are so few women in STEM, period. And most companies want you to have some kind of technical background to even go into sales. So the pipeline for women in STEM sales is even smaller than it is in other industries.
But I'm seeing a great trend of upward trend, and it's fantastic. I love seeing it because women provide just a different and unique perspective. Not everybody agrees with it, but it's just a one more blinder to take off. And I love my team of guys that I work with. I mean, we just have a fantastic time. And then I have a great team at Illuminate, and we have women on there, and so it's exciting.
So you were on the dark side of entrepreneurship. You stepped back into the light and became a W-2 employee. And now you're back on the dark side again as an entrepreneur. So tell me, why did you decide to launch your own business?
Well, it's a series of divine intervention. I was involved in a really, really bad car wreck. We were hit by a drunk driver, and the individual next to me almost died. A couple of people in the car almost died. And it was a moment where I specifically remembered, had I died at that moment, I would have regretted what I had brought to the world, to my life. In 2011, I tried to patent some things that I had sketched out in the OR for medical devices. Got overwhelmed with that process, and because of the cost, and how could some random girl out of Springfield, Missouri, do what the manufacturers of global supply chains do? You know, like it. I mean, I got overwhelmed, and in 2018, after that wreck occurred, it was like, I don't want to make those same mistakes again. If life is too short, and if you don't try, I don't want to go on my deathbed saying, I wish I would have. The goal of my life now is to live it with as few regrets as possible. And right now, I don't have any regrets. I think that this is a beautiful path, and it was designed outside of me, because something larger than me is at play.
Mm, I love that. A lot of times that's what it takes for us to walk in our passion, right? To walk in our purpose. It takes that life-altering experience where, and like for you, it was almost like your life flashed in front of you, right? And you said, nope, this is not it. This is not where my legacy, this is not where my story ends. So tell me, so 2018, we're a couple years post 2018 now, you had struggles before, but what has helped you keep going for the past couple of years to continue to build this company?
It's developing people that believe in it, developing a team of bright people who believe in the trajectory and believe in how it can change and differentiate the market. And that's what's so exciting about it is the connect. Things just seem to go very smoothly, weirdly enough, and people are coming into the team that I never could have even imagined it would be at this point. Sure, I thought later on down the line we would have some great neurosurgeons utilizing the product, and that this is truly a new subset of the market, but I can't thank WashU enough for the support that they've given me. We just got accepted into the St. Louis Biogenerator to accelerate the growth of the company, and we're going to be doing testing very soon. So it's an exciting moment. It's bigger than me. I honestly have no, I can't pinpoint anything because it's so profoundly different than anything that I've ever done.
And so usually towards the end of the episode, I ask people what is one thing that they're most proud of accomplishing, but I feel like you've already told us so much. So I'm not sure if you have, is there something else that you can say that you're really proud of yourself for accomplishing thus far in your life?
Showing my son to never give up. I think, honestly, that's probably the most honest answer I can give. And to never give up. Your age, your weight, your demographic, your education. If you believe in something wholeheartedly, then do it. And find, if you don't have the money to do it, find somebody that does and that believes in you. Take the risk. There is no risk. There is no reward without risk.
I love that. Really showing our children that, you know, in the work that we do, in the way that we walk, and the things that we believe in, you know, like, hey, you can do it too. And so when they look at us with their little eyes or big eyes, and now my son is like almost taller than me, it just really lets us know that we have done the right thing. So what would you say, what would be the piece of advice that you would give a woman that is interested in getting into medical device sales?
Know your strategy. You have to know your strategy. You have to know where you excel. You have to know where your weaknesses are. And then you have to align it with what you want. And then take baby steps, even if it takes you years to get there. Never give up if it's what you truly want. And then be nimble. If something even better comes along the way, go with that. And but always put yourself out there. Put yourself, put one foot in front of the other in the direction that you want to achieve, and never give up unless you have a better opportunity that comes to you.
I love it. Never give up. Never give up. And that was an excellent, excellent final thought for our listeners. So for those who would like to get in contact with you, what is the one best way?
Feel free to email me or find me on LinkedIn. I'm Alyssa, A-L-Y-S-S-A, Huffman, H-U-F-F, as in Frank, M-A-N. And my email address is alyssa.huffman@gmail.com. Happy to chat and connect.
Well, Well, thank you so much, Alyssa. It's been a pleasure learning about your journey, the way that you started in sales that was so much earlier than so many of us, having that gumption, and now launching something that, like you said, is bigger than yourself. Thanks for taking time today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
And that was another episode of The Science of Selling STEM. Remember, click below, subscribe, leave us a review. Let me know if you like the format of the show, anything that you want to change. And remember, in all that you do, transform your sales.
Thank you for joining us today on the Snack Sized Sales Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe and leave us a review. Learn how to continue increasing your bottom line by getting simplified sales strategies delivered to your inbox weekly by going to www.snacksizedsales.com. Trust me, your bank account will grow and love you.